Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mbiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're going to be talking about, something that a lot of people talk about in the South African context, and that is entrepreneurship. But more importantly for today, we're going to be talking about, what it takes, to embrace the entrepreneurial mindset. And joining us is Daniel Levy, co-founder and co-CEO of Flow, to give us some lessons that he says are from the trenches. Daniel, greetings to you today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's begin with the elevator pitch on Flow before we get into the trenches.
Yeah, Flow is a data ad tech business. We enable different sectors of various different industries where we merge data and ad tech that essentially emanates on various different social platforms, Facebook, programmatic, Google. We play in the retail media space predominantly. And a business all over the world.
All right. And because we're a business platform, we always, want to know and understand, how is business going?
Sure, very good. It's been an amazing ride.
All right. Cool. So one of the things that I want to maybe get and understand from you guys is, before we even talk about mindsets, when it comes to entrepreneurship, I like to think of myself as a first principles type of guy. So if we're going to really delve into this at the base, should we not be speaking about the fact that it seems as if we have romanticized the notion of entrepreneurship? Don't you think?
Yeah, totally. I think the notion of being successful as an entrepreneur and the master of your own destiny and your own boss and calling your own shots is certainly an alluring thing. Pulling it off, something entirely different. So yes, I definitely believe that there's a cavity, and I think equally. There's a long, hard slog in terms of actually, pursuing an entrepreneurial lifestyle. And in my mind, I think it is a lifestyle because it comes with, ebbs and flows. There's a lot of emotional turmoil that goes through, a lot of stress, a lot of people that depend on you at all given points of time. I mean, there are a million and one trigger points that can, tell you that the easier way is to earn a living if that's your drive. Alternatively, mental stimulation or personal growth or whatever the trigger is. But invariably, you're always staring down a barrel of thoughts. And being an entrepreneur in my mind has always, taken a view that there's no plan B. And if that is the road that you choose, you're not on the earth forever. So there's a finite period of time to make those dreams come true. So, those are kind of a few trigger points of what I know and understand of my journey and certainly what gets me to wake up in the morning.
So maybe we can use your journey maybe just as an example, because the reason I asked that is I wanted to get a sense of earlier on you said that business has been okay has been good from a Flow point of view, right? And the thing for me was I was going to ask is to say, for yourself, as a co-founder of Flow, were you guys forced into a situation of starting a company like Flow, or was it a decision, of your own volition to start something like this? Because that seems to feed into whether or not a person has that, make or break, where here there's no plan B type of mindset. Yeah.
Got you. So I think to answer that question in the shortest possible way with a long answer, is to maybe a bit about my background's relevance. So I trained as a commercial attorney a little under 20 years ago. And instinctively, I always knew I was on the wrong side of the table. You know, I was just, you know, putting deals together for guys that were really thinking big, thinking outside the box. They really kind of oozed what I felt was my makeup. I didn't resonate with law or the business model associated with it. And law is an industry where you need a bit of gray hair in order to be taken seriously. You know, you don't want to go to a doctor who's only been doing surgery for 3 years. You want to go to a guy who's been around the block. So similarly, I was full of ideas, me and a couple of mates. One thing led to another. We started a business in the media world. It started to get a little bit of traction, although it was very, very difficult at that point in time. Yet you're young and dumb, and you have very little, or you've got a high propensity for risk by virtue of being young. So it enables you to do a lot of things that ordinarily you probably wouldn't do the later on or the older you get. That business was really at the forefront of when Facebook was getting traction back in 2007. South Africa is probably like the 10th largest territory in the world. We had an idea. My other co-founders were both engineers. I think just, you know, a lawyer and two engineers have a particular way of thinking. You know, both are trained to solve problems in different ways and preempt things. But we embarked on a media environment of which there was just a blank canvas in our world. There were no scars. There was no, there was nothing that would hold us back. Long story short, we built technology way back when that enabled large, big businesses to buy media inventory on social channels, Facebook, then Instagram, and Twitter, all through one piece of technology. That business grew to become the largest buyers of Facebook media inventory in Africa. And we landed up exiting that company to a French listed group called Publicis in 2015. Now, you leave something like that with a lot of scars on your back and quite a bit of kudos in the sense of, geez, can't believe I actually pulled something like that off. You know, you don't build a business thinking you're going to sell it. You just build a business thinking that you can feed yourself. But once you've done something like that, it becomes quite an addictive thing to go, well, can I do that again? I must say, you know, I always thought of myself as a serial entrepreneur, but to start again, even with scars on your back, is probably more daunting than the first time you pulled it off, simply because you're now well aware of pitfalls and various things of that nature. So to answer your question, how did Flow come about? Well, we had basically did everything we could do in that industry by virtue of representing the likes of Unilever, Nestle, Insurance, Moto Trade. The one industry we didn't represent at that point in time was property. And I've always had an inclination to be in that world. It fascinates me. It's a large asset class. And we took a view that there was a problem to solve. The problem was millennial behavior. We thought that millennials don't want to own anything, you know, not even a car. You can Uber. Like, the world had changed. And if we could build a business, we could scale it. The business in its initial form and function was to reward tenants for good behavior, much like, Vitality is to Discovery, Flow was to the landlord environment. And we slowly started to build something. Then COVID hit. And it was out of sheer desperation of not knowing what was going to happen. But COVID for us was we had nothing to lose. It's a very interesting statement where everyone was trying to maintain revenue or business. We had nothing to lose because it was a startup. And it enabled that blank canvas thinking again of where the opportunity was. And that started to drive our business flow into the direction of where we saw we could solve a very big need, particularly in the property industry. And then one thing led So now that we, you know, the technology that we built over the years is actually applicable in various different industries. So we were, I'd like to think, right place, right time. Many scars on our back. We stuck to the knitting, and it evolved.
And I really like the fact that you've led us down that story, Daniel. And what's interesting to me is how you framed the dilemma of, you know, you've now got an appetite to start another business because you've exited the one. So there's a part of you that's like, wow, can't believe I did that. Could I do it again? But in doing it again, you are not getting into the bright-eyed and bushy-tailed anymore, because you now understand what it actually takes, you know, to build and scale a business to that level. So from that point of view then, one of the things that I'm keen to get your thoughts on, because we're talking about mindsets, is an entrepreneurial mindset, is that something that can be taught? Or is that something that you think is innately in someone? And I ask that because you made an interesting comment earlier on where you said when you were putting on, when you were a lawyer, you were putting together deals, and you used to admire these guys that you were putting deals together for, because as far as you were concerned, these guys were inclined the way that you felt that you were inclined.
So I believe, I do not believe you're born an entrepreneur. I believe your mindset may resonate with entrepreneurial behavior. And it's then your tenacity and drive to determine whether that is a path that you want to pursue, right? And, you know, if you look at mentorship and who I was fortunate to have in and out of my life growing up, be it business people, my parents, my late dad, it gave me access to just understanding people thinking big, being in and amongst, you know, big conversations. And, you know, I've always encouraged young entrepreneurs or people who want to pursue that to always try and get around gray hair, because you're not reinventing the wheel. It may come across in a different way, shape, or form, but ultimately it strikes a thirst for trying to push the boundaries and push them as far as possible in a way that absolutely excites you. And that thirst of entrepreneurial thinking, if that is the direction, certainly for me, was to try and attain as much information from as many people as possible, as quickly as possible. To deliver to my personal agenda of growth. And that's really where I think the, you know, the tenacity comes from.
Makes a lot of sense when you put it, that way. You know, just at least leveraging, you know, from people that have walked the path. It might not be the exact path, but a lot of the time, you know, there'll be similar, you know, challenges or at least hurdles along the way. So if you can learn from someone, always good. Now, I always tell the story that on the first day of me going to business school, the head of our business school at the time, this was at Rhodes, he said that in business, there's a lot that we can teach you guys when it comes to your academic studies and all that. But in terms of success in business, sometimes the honest truth is that there's an element, he used the word at the time, he said, whether we like it or not, there's an element of serendipity. That's the word he used at the time, being at the right place at the right time. And you actually mentioned, you know, through this discussion a couple of minutes ago, being in the right place at the right time. So maybe you could just talk to us, you know, for yourself, and I guess in an entrepreneur's journey, the place of something like that, just the simple act and fact of being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, it's such a interesting question you ask, because if I think about it in my world, serendipity is a reflection of hindsight. You know, you don't know that it's serendipity at the time that it's happening. But when you look back, it becomes quite clear that you were at the right place at the right time. Does that make sense? And in my world,
that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah. In my world, it's been, there are many, many ebbs and flows. You know, in I was talking to my wife the other day, you know, you move forward in life 10 steps and you move back to it. It's the same like a startup, you know, it's just never a straight line. And it's many small serendipitous moments and, you know, hopefully some big serendipitous moments that are kind of the inflection points in growth in a business, which you certainly need in order to keep moving forward. But I would love to say that they're all by design, but invariably it is multiple failures to figure out that the small ones are the ones that lead to the big growth. And you know, my partner and I always joke when something big happens or we can feel it, we always say it's a chapter in the book, you know, or we'll remember this one. And those are just our signals to each other that we've understood something's changed. We understood something's significant. And it's an acknowledgement to then move forward beyond that point.
You know, when with everything that you've just said about being in the right place at the right time, you know, that usually bodes well, especially as a business is going through, you know, its various stages. You make this one linkage and it maybe gives you an entry into the market. You know, another linkage might be, you know, the linchpin that helps you to scale your business. You know, something else might be the thing that actually makes your business, you know, mainstream, right? All of these different factors all working together. But where I want to take this conversation now, just switching gears a little bit, Daniel, is on the scaling aspect for a business. Because apart from starting a business, one of the hardest phases for a lot of entrepreneurs is the scaling piece. You found the problem that you want to solve for, you found a solution, and your solution has a market fit. People are taking on your solution. You're gaining customers in the market. But now the question is scaling. How do you grow this business? How do you scale this business? And it often feels and like you need a completely different set of mental tools to be able to take a business from that, you know, I guess, initial startup phase into that, you know, proper growth and scale up type of phase. When we look at some of the really famous examples in the world, we know that at that phase, that's when some people perhaps let things go and will give it over to, in the case of the two Google founders, you find yourself in Eric Schmidt and you say, hey, man, you do this thing. We just want to keep, you know, with the ideas and all that stuff. We understand we're not the business guys. You take this on. Whereas other people, you can have an Elon Musk who's like, I am there at the start. I am there at the scaling. I am there all over the place. So maybe you could just talk to us from a mindset point of view as someone who has gone through a scaling, you know, of a business before, you know, what something like that takes.
Great question. Talking about this the other day, I always use my former business as a benchmark to the scars on our back and, you know, the various different milestones of learning. In that business, by the time we had sold it, it was really a cookie cut way of doing business. We knew what we did. We knew what we sold. We knew how we made money. It was just, how do you do more of that? In our business today, in its first iteration, I recall one of our investors saying to us when he invested, he said, you do realize that your business is going to be a very different thing in 12 months. Obviously, instinctively, I knew that. But when you look forward in 12 months and you sold them a concept of what was then a B2C play, I need to look at ourselves today where we're a B2B play. You know, it's a fundamental pivot in a business in terms of understanding who it is you're actually selling to and how do you scale that. So what we've always done is I for better or worse, I'm very good with numbers and, you know, quasi CFO in my business amongst sales and legal and the various other facets that I look after. But I've always been very astute and aligned to understanding where I fall on my client's income statement. And flow plays in the marketing realm, right? And marketing budgets are invariably the top three largest line items in any business income statement. So the reason I give you that analogy is because it was always our true north of how do you build your business at scale that you can command as much of their marketing budget as possible, right? And when we started, our customers were estate agents. We were just going after the property vertical, and you can imagine a estate agent has not a lot of money to spend on marketing, yet there are thousands of estate agents. Over time, we recognized that the technology was just as easy for a Unilever to use. And it would be a different discussion, but their market spending power is much bigger, right? So you're now taking a view of, well, you can go after a much bigger total addressable market with massive budgets. And how do you scale that? So we've taken time to understand how our tech was, tech can be used in various different verticals. And that has led us down this path of scaling that within different environments, be it, you know, retail media networks, as we call it, or marketplaces. And each one's got a different application. But it has taught us to go after, you know, the final point being what I call a one-to-many. So when we started, we were going estate agent to estate agent, and then we realized, why don't you just partner with a property portal? You know, they're talking to all the estate agents. So distribution became the key in our world to scale. And that is where we eat, sleep, and breathe. How do you build distribution?
Any advice, you know, to either budding or, you know, entrepreneurs that are in the thick of it right now in terms of finding, you know, that thing that helps them to move the needle on that front? Because at least in your case, you've spoken about the fact that you had to iterate for you to be able to make that type of realization.
Yes. I think I think you're on a path, but it's a good inflection point to question what you're doing, how you're doing it. Is it actually the right avenue for you? And sometimes, you know, speaking to peers or competitors or just trying to think big and outside the box will often bring clarity to your conviction. And as I mentioned, you know, a little earlier was, you know, surround yourself by people who've done things of this nature before that, you know, want to give of their time and are happy to give you some nuggets that you could implement within your business. But, you know, an entrepreneurial road can be a very lonely one, particularly if you don't have a partner to shoot the breeze with and ideate. But often, you know, the answer staring in front of you just needs somebody to give different optics to different ways in which you can execute. And that could unlock a whole host of opportunities.
It's actually very cool, you know, what you've just said, you know, to say that a lot of the time it tends to be the things that are staring, you know, right in front of us, you know, that end up being, you know, that thing, as opposed to actually going out and finding something new. You know, you just need a new perspective, you know, on what's, you know, on what's already there. So, the other thing, though, when it comes to this, you know, entrepreneurial journey, and I think it's probably the hardest thing that a person needs to make peace with is the fact that you've said it in maybe not in so many words, but you have, you know, alluded to it earlier on. And I've heard a number of other entrepreneurs also saying it, you know, to say that you almost have to become comfortable with what you call this, with uncertainty or discomfort of some kind, that you sort of have to make peace with the fact that this is just going to be your normal life, that seeking peace is just not a thing.
Yeah, I call it be comfortable being uncomfortable. You know, I've just recognized who I am as a person, and I'm very comfortable with that. And I thrive in a constant, you know, vortex of thinking outside the box. I'm not the personality to sit behind a desk and be employed to the extent that I'm told what to do. I need to constantly challenge myself. And to that end, you know, it's where you are very uncomfortable that invariably you make your biggest, boldest decisions. And you have to have the conviction to, you know, so-called live and die by that. And where we've been bold, we've been rewarded. And it's not something that you do each and every single day, but you've got to have a personality that pushes yourself. You know, I also live by the mantra where I'm not looking for anybody's validation. I'm only looking to validate myself to me. And I believe that I'm capable of many things, and therefore I constantly challenge myself to figure stuff out, and to, you know, to pursue my goals and dreams. And that keeps me true and honest with my energy and direction.
Are you comfortable to share maybe some of the, you know, uncomfortable decisions that you typically have to make?
Let's see if I can think of quick ones that come to mind. I mean, you know, the obvious ones are, you know, we've had to, you know, be at parting ways with staff is probably a, you know, not a grand one, but probably a logical one that many people would say. But often you can get into a state of comfort where you just got the wrong players around you. You know, sometimes that resonates all the way up to board levels, you know, where you just don't have the right people energy around you, and you've got to make some really, really hard decisions. There've been, you know, there was a point in time in our lives, you know, post our last exit where we were involved in various different companies. It's kind of like a quote unquote ego around that kind of thing. You know, I don't see myself as a venture capitalist, albeit that I did play in that space for a while. So to make a conscious decision that I didn't want to do that anymore and I just wanted to focus on one thing was a very big decision for me, because you know, comparably think that you have a fear of missing out. So they're things where I know and understand how my mind works, where my comfort zones are, where my uncomfort zones are. And I'm quite brutal like that, in the sense that, you know, I'm acutely aware of time. I'm not going to be around forever, and there's a finite time that I have in order to do what I want to do. I like surrounding myself by, you know, positive, smart people that can enable me and me them. And if, you know, if those things aren't in my ether, then I don't want to be there. So they can be big decisions, small decisions, but, you know, life's taken me on that journey to learn and understand those levers for me.
All right. And perhaps on a last note for us to bring this, you know, to a close, one of the things that you mentioned earlier on is obviously the mentorship aspect, where you said that, you know, we should people wherever they can surround yourself with as much gray as possible, because in many instances, we're not really trying to reinvent the wheel. But I know that for other people, you know, they take advice from books. I don't know whether you're a book man yourself. If so, are there any books that you'd like to recommend?
So one of the ones that I always tell my staff to read is a book by, called The Psychology of Money. I forget who the author is, but it is a brilliantly written book on, you know, why people invest, why people make the decisions, why people carry the you know, the burdens of thinking they need to be somebody that they're not, be it, you know, ethereal, or be it, you know, you need to follow the Joneses, etc. It's a really great distillation of understanding. When I first read it, I thought this would be a wonderful book to give to my child or children when they're of age, to really make their own decisions of what they want to achieve. I think I listen to a lot of podcasts. I love an entrepreneurial journey just like you, and I like practicality. I think the unfortunate thing is the world's so fast that there's, you know, when I listen to things, it's either on Audible or at a million miles an hour just so I can get on to the next thing. But one practical thing that I would recommend, it's not a book, but there are entrepreneurial organizations, one called EO, there's another one called YPO. I've been part of EO, I'm part of YPO. These are, you know, surrounding yourself with like-minded people, be it CEOs or founders, that are sharing comparable pains in different ways, shapes, or forms, and you know, not only pains, but adulation, where it's a confidential environment to really tag team off each other and understand how it is that you can, you know, finesse and grow your life in both personal and physical. And that's kind of like it's a form of mentorship, which is to me probably the biggest gain I've had in my life.
All right. And I think on that note, that's where we land today's, you know, conversation. You know, just talking about the entrepreneurial mindset, what it takes, you know, to do well right now. Really great just hearing some of the insights, you know, from Daniel giving us, you know, his own journey in the world of entrepreneurship, you know, having started and sold a business in the past and then, you know, getting back on the horse, starting something else, you know, in a similar vein, but, you know, experiencing it, you know, slightly differently. Also giving us some insight into, I guess, some of the decision making, you know, that, you know, goes into all of those different stages. I think he had that statement during the conversation where he said, when you start a business, you're not, you know, a lot of the time you don't think you're going to be starting something to sell it. You know, you're starting something, you know, to be able to feed yourself. So being able to get to a point where you can sell something, it's one of those things that can have an impact on, you know, one's mindset, because you have empirical evidence that you can do it, and what it takes. But you know, your ability then to parlay that into another venture, you know, also takes on a different complexion. It takes on its own set of skills and abilities to make something like that happen. Also interesting, you know, just chatting, you know, about the scale discussion, you know, what does it take to grow a business to that next stage? You found your market fit. You're now saying, okay, fine. We know what we're doing. We know how we're making money. How do we just do more of it? And he gave us some practical lessons about how they were able, you know, in his previous business to actually go out and, you know, be able to iterate until they found, you know, that distribution, I think that's what he said, was what needed to be focused on, you know, to take that business, you know, to the next level. Also understanding, you know, just being comfortable with some of the uncertainty. I think the statement that he said is that you need to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's just a way in which, you know, some of these things has to happen. And also serendipity, you know, just being at the right place at the right time. And, you know, the key thing that he said there is that a lot of the time, your serendipity is not recognized in the moment, but rather in retrospect, when you look back on something, then you realize, you know, that you were in the right place at the right time, or that certain things came together in the right way. And then just ending off with some of the advice, you know, for those that want to, you know, perhaps enhance their mindsets, how can they do so? And a book that he does, you know, recommend is The Psychology of Money. So that's been it. We were, you know, talking, you know, about that entrepreneurial mindset. Thank you so much. We were in conversation with Daniel Levy. He is the co-founder and co-CEO of Flow. Daniel, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much. Thoroughly enjoyed that. Take care.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.